am excited to continue talking about what I kind of introduced last week. I'll brush up on a few kind of points and things that I mentioned just in case anybody here or was not here last week. But I've been really, really interested recently in just exploring the realm of truth and what it means to be a person who seeks to know, who wants to know truth, a person whose aim in life is to really know what is true. And it's an amazing thing that, and I love how the Bible describes this in a few different ways. And that conversation, I've talked about this, between Jesus and Pilate is fascinating to me. And I think that the question that Pilate poses of what is truth is one that is incredibly profound and one that I think is worth spending a lot of time considering. We do know, biblically speaking, Jesus says, he said, I am truth, right? Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. And he also promised his disciples, he said, you know, when I go, don't worry because the helper is going to come and I will send the spirit of truth. And the spirit of truth will guide you into all the truth. And of course, the implication is if we need a guide into knowing what is true, then I think the implication is there must be things that we're thinking and believing that are wrong and that need to be realigned. And you know, in the interest of pursuing truth, it's helpful to know that there is a foundation upon which truth can be established. And that foundation is Jesus, and it is the Word, right? And Jesus is the Word. But that Jesus is the Word and he is the truth and that he sent his spirit to dwell in and among us, and that is the spirit of truth. And there are a lot of different ways I feel like we could start talking about this. I see a lot of different avenues of thought that we could pursue. And on one hand, I think maybe what I feel like I've spent the most time on just in recent history thinking through and even teaching on is just the idea that It is unbelievably important that we know how he thinks of us. Yeah. It's really, really important. We need to know the truth about what he's like, and we need to know the truth about who he says we are. and so you can start pursuing this in terms of, you know, identity. Who is God, and what is he really like? Do I have any misconceptions about him? Have my experiences in life up until this point taught me to believe things about him that maybe aren't true, according to his word? Right? Have I had experiences in life that have taught me to believe that he's maybe not as kind as the Bible indicates that he is? Maybe he doesn't love me as much. Maybe he's not as safe or as good. And that's the hard thing, is that everybody in this room has had their own experiences in life. And for everybody, at varying degrees, life is really hard. Life can be really hard at times. And for us, it's learning how to navigate difficult circumstances in life without allowing those circumstances to dictate what we think about him. But rather, as we explore the truth about him and what he's like, it'll actually redirect the way we actually view the circumstances that we're in. And so you can look at it that way. Later on, kind of in the second half, I'm going to do something that I did this like a year and a half ago, and it was really fun for me, and I'm going to do it again. And it involves a whiteboard. You guys know I love a good whiteboard. I feel like I'm not me if I don't have a whiteboard. And it's that small one, so I'm sorry. You guys on like the way outside, you may not have a great view. We have this great big TV. Maybe you've seen it, and it can be used as a whiteboard, but it's really heavy. So getting it up on that stage isn't a good idea. At least that's what Braden told me, so... also, last week, I kind of introduced this idea of that we all have a hierarchy of values, and in this hierarchy of values, what happens sometimes is as we explore the Word and as we explore God's kingdom and as we explore a relationship with Him, things begin to be revealed to us about his nature and about his kingdom and about what is important to him and how he operates and how he thinks. And sometimes when that happens, you are faced with the reality that that what is important to me is different than what's important to him, and what he values aren't always making my, you know, don't always make my own hierarchy of values. And so when that happens, I think our instinct is to say, well, if this is important to Jesus, I want it to be important to me. And I think that's an important place to start. But there's a flip side to that too, is rather than stopping there, we also need to ask the question, if I'm not valuing what Jesus valued, is there a counterfeit worldly value that has taken that value spot in my hierarchy of values? And so maybe it's not just that I need to make what Jesus likes more important, but I need to figure out what is preventing me from valuing what he values and devalue that so I can reorder and restructure how I think and what's important to me. Some of you guys have heard me speak on culture before. I'm not going to talk a lot about this, but I find I almost can't even speak on values without speaking on culture, because culture, to the best of my ability to describe what a culture is that a culture is an understanding of this is how we do things here. And cultures are built upon the values of people who are in authority in any given place. And the thing about cultures is they exist everywhere. Every church has a culture, every place of business, you know, restaurants, hotels, doctor's offices, your home, every place has a culture. Elevators have culture. If you get on an elevator and there's somebody there and they're standing in this corner, you don't come and you don't stand in this corner. You come over here and you stand in this corner, right? In the elevator, there are like social norms and rules that we follow, right? If I'm in this corner, don't come stand right next to me if there's nobody else in the elevator, right? You should be banished to the stairs if you do that. Men's bathrooms have a culture. A lot of you guys already know exactly what I'm about to say, but if you're a man and you walk into a bathroom, there's three urinals and nobody is there, you don't take the middle one, right? It's this like widespread, like kind of unspoken rule, but we all get it, right? You take one of the outside ones. And if you walk in and somebody's at one of the outside ones, you take the other outside one, right? And then you know, if need be, somebody walks in, you take that third one, but you start, you know. All that to say is cultures exist everywhere, right? Countries have cultures, even states have cultures, north versus south. And so if there is any place in which you have authority, whether it's your home, maybe you're a business owner, the car you drive, your car's got a culture. Do you keep it clean? Is there trash everywhere? Do you change the oil? But if we're going to look at the places in which we have authority, and we want to bring the culture of the kingdom of heaven to those places, that first has to take root personally in us, internally, before we can have that manifest outwardly and create an atmosphere. I cannot create an atmosphere of peace in my home if I do not have peace internally, right? I can't create an atmosphere of joy in my home if I'm not experiencing the joy of the Lord yet. And so all that to say is because cultures are built upon the values of those who are in authority, again, if we're, and this, I think you can tie this into what Noah had been preaching on, that we are the royal priesthood and that we, you know, we've been designed and created to rule and reign as co-heirs, as the Bible say, co-heirs to the kingdom of heaven with Christ. And so we do have a level of authority to bring the kingdom of heaven here. And so I guess from there you get to just explore the kingdom and you get to explore what is the Father like? What is present in heaven that should be here? What is present here that is not present in heaven? And what can we do to bring heaven here? And so again, as we start to see more clearly what Jesus is like and what his kingdom is like and who he says we are, the more clearly we understand how he operates and how he thinks, I think the more clearly we can start to view our own values and our own beliefs and our own ideas, and start to weigh those against what we know to be true about him. And again, if I see something that Jesus is, that's very clearly important to him, but it's not to me, now I get to go explore and figure out why exactly is this not valuable to me yet. And also last week, I don't even know if I'm, am I still recapping? I might still be recapping last week. I don't even know. So the specific value that I introduced last week that I want to keep talking about is the value of being a person who pursues truth and seeks truth. And because Jesus is the truth and his spirit is the spirit of truth. So obviously truth is of great value to him. And I wanted to propose to you that if we are not people who seek truth, it's because that value has been replaced by a counterfeit worldly value, and that value is of being a person who wants to be right. And so I left you guys last week with a question, and the question I posed was, if you were wrong about something that you thought or believed, how would you know? If you were wrong, how would you know? And there's actually a question we have to ask before that one, even, because I don't think it's really possible for you to know whether or not you're actually wrong in how you think or believe until you are willing to position yourself to where you would want to know if you were wrong. Because if we position ourselves in such a way that we are uninterested in discovering whether or not what we think or believe is actually true, then I don't know that you can ever really know if what you believe or think is true. And it's tricky because it can look the same on the outside. These are in your notes too, and I've got like these two columns of, you know, these are characteristics of people who like to be right, and these are characteristics of people who like to know what is true. And there are differences. They can be hard to tell sometimes on the outside. I'm actually probably just going to read through some of these with you. So if you have your QR code notes, you can follow. If not, you can listen. So on the left column, the desire to be right, the first characteristic of that type of person is pride. And a prideful person will feel justified in having an unvalidated assumption that they know better than anyone who disagrees with them. Their thoughts, ideas, and beliefs are irrefutably right. Now, that's a terrifying way to live. That is a really, I see nothing but darkness down the path of a person who believes that they are irrefutably right. On the flip side, if you are a person who desires to know truth, then you are marked by humility. And a humble person can hold firm to their convictions while simultaneously considering the value of how someone else thinks. If you are a person who desires to be right, then you are closed-minded. And a closed-minded person doesn't listen to understand. Instead, they tune out and they formulate their next point or response. Have you ever been in a conversation with somebody and you're in a dialogue and you're like, you are literally not even listening to a word I say, you're just waiting to tell me why I'm wrong? Have you been in those conversations? Maybe some of us are those people. Like, let's be honest, we like to be right. We like to be heard and we like to be right. And we like to, you know, we kind of like when other people are wrong too, if we're being honest. On the other hand, a teachable person listens for the purpose of understanding. If you're in a dialogue with somebody and you're in a disagreement and what they think is different than how you think, you would be surprised how much value there is in actually listening to what other people have to say and weighing whether or not what they have to say is value and could be right. Okay, then we have afraid of being wrong. People who are afraid of being wrong are interested in preserving their ideas and their image, are more interested in that than in learning. On the other hand, people who love to know truth, they ask questions. And a person who wants to know what is true will ask questions because they would rather be informed and find out that they're wrong than to be uninformed and assume that they're right. And again, that is, I think for a lot of us, that can be a much harder place to get to. It's not easy approaching a conversation with a mindset that I want to know what you have to think because I would rather be wrong and learn something than to try and justify over and over again why I'm right. A person who just wants to be right demands agreement. And a person who demands agreement doesn't know how to have relationship in the midst of disagreement. They like their echo chambers of ideology and are less likely to grow and mature. On the other hand, a person who loves truth will seek understanding. And a person whose goal in communicating, a person who loves to seek understanding is a person whose goal in communicating is to pursue understanding, that they will intentionally engage with people who think differently with them. Let me ask you, when was the last time you intentionally listened, whether it was through conversation or a podcast or something, when was the last time you intentionally placed yourself in a position to hear thoughts and ideas from a person that you know you disagree with? If this is before my time a little bit, some of you guys will remember this. In the 80s, when Ronald Reagan was president, the Speaker of the House was a guy named Tip O'Neill. Do you guys know? I don't know Tip O'Neill. Some of you guys do. And I've read articles about their relationship, and people say it was really fascinating. And the sad thing is you don't really see this today anymore, especially in the world of politics. But these two guys were like totally in opposition politically of one another. And they would debate and they would argue and they would fight and they would go head to head and they would go toe to toe. And then 5 o'clock would come and they'd say, all right, you wanna go get a steak? And they'd go out and they were friends and they could be friendly and they could share a meal together, right? And that's unfortunately not something you see really anymore. And think back to when Trump was president. Could you imagine going to a steakhouse and seeing him at a table with Nancy Pelosi, and they're just like chatting it up and having, you know, and they're like, yeah, we're off work right now, so we're just gonna, you know, grab a steak and just hang out, right? And it's laughable. And that's the sad thing, is that we have moved as a society, we've moved so far from that place of just being able to actually remain in relationship with people even in the midst of disagreement. People who like to be right, they live in a place of assumption and accusation. And these are people who allow themselves to live in a place of assuming the thoughts and motives of everyone around them. And those people also cannot help but to become accusatory. The thing is, if I'm a person who assumes, I assume your motive, I assume that I know why you think the way you think. I assume that I know enough about your life to understand, you know, why you believe what you believe and what's important to you and why. I cannot help, if that's true of me, I cannot help but to become accusatory. And the thing is, like, there is an accuser of the brethren, and it shouldn't be us. And so I want to propose that what we can do is we can trade assumption for wonder. And so a person who wants to know truth, they will trade assumption, accusation for wonder. And so if I am in a disagreement with somebody, let's say, again, me and Stephen have a disagreement. It could be theological, it could be political, it could be anything. Rather than jumping to the assumption that he is wrong, I can start to wonder. I wonder why he thinks the way he thinks. I wonder what you know that has led you to this understanding. I wonder if I might actually be wrong about this. The thing about loving truth and being a person who pursues truth is it doesn't mean that you have to agree with everybody. It just means that you are open to the possibility that you might be wrong about some things. And lastly, conformity. A person who wants to be right, they will pursue conformity. And the higher a person values conformity, the more easily they will create division. On the other hand, a person who loves truth will not value or pursue conformity, but unity. And it's important to know that unity and conformity aren't the same things. And so the higher a person values unity, the easier and more inclusive they will be in inviting people into the conversation. And it will be easier for them to find a healthy order and balance of how they think and what they believe. Now, I'm ready. Could you get that for me? Here comes the whiteboard. Woo! Joe. I want to read this verse real quick. This is Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. Paul says, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." Okay. I have a drink of this little tiny water bottle. Do you feel like you guys on the ends will be able to see this okay? Okay, great. I can come here. Okay. Now, one more thing I want to do. Okay, this is going to be back and forth. So I'm going to ask you guys questions, and I want you to respond to me. Now, what are things that you, it could be people in general, what are some things that you or people in general consider important regarding their experience at church? Now, I'm going to stop. This is not your moment to be super spiritual, okay? Be superficial, okay? Let's not pretend like we don't all come here or that people in churches all over the area don't have these kinds of thoughts, okay? So be superficial. I'll give you a chance to be super spiritual, but not yet. So what are some things that people generally consider important regarding their experience at church? Length of service. Length of service. Clearly handwriting is not a value to me, so bear with me. I heard something. Temperature? Temperature. Programs available. Programs. How loud the worship is. I'm just going to put worship because Dar's like, all right, worship, this. So worship, and for some people it's the loudness. Sometimes it's the length. When do we do that? What else? Friendliness. Whoa, service time? Great, that's a good one. Service time, I'll put time/day because some people won't go to church if it's not on Sunday, okay. Who's speaking? Okay, somebody other than Darlene, let's come over here. Who's got content? Okay. See, I'm going to put parking too. That's good. Lighting. Okay. I'm scribbling at this point. Okay. Say it again. Distracting kids. Yeah. Kids ministry. Okay. That'll fall under programs. Attire. Ooh. Let's do like one or two more. Mistakes on the screen. Like bad handwriting or like what? Typos. Okay. Just like in general. Yeah. And you're just speaking for people in general, right? Yeah. Hypothetically, people might care about typos. Okay. One more. How many people attend? Okay, yeah. Some people don't want a big or a small church. Number of people. Okay. Now, let's go. I want to make sure. How did I word that? Okay. Now, let's talk about something that you or people in general might consider important regarding like the lifestyle of a Christian. Now let's get into topics that are often like theologically debated, right? Alcohol, I'll start us off. Tongues, I'll put gifts of the Spirit. Are they for today, are they not? It's on the board. I'm not changing it. giving. Okay. I like that. I heard something. Ooh. I'm going to put tulip because I grew up Presbyterian. If you don't know what that means, you can look it up. Fivefold, excellent. What? Okay. Yeah, yes, great. Reading Bible. Sexuality. No, I know. I'm just wondering if we already covered that. I'll put it up here because it could. Politics. Bible translation. Denominations, let's get into like give me something controversial. Women preachers, there we go. I heard abortion, I heard divorce. I think I've got sexuality, so I'll keep that. give me something that you have like debated with somebody like recently, like, and you're like, this is okay. And they're like, no, this is not okay. And you're like, yes, it is. And they're like, no, it's not. Like, is there, like, give me some of those things. I'm going to wait on that. Works versus grace. Let's do like one or two more. How about, I'm going to write my own because I want to. I'm going to write Harry Potter. Prophecy. I feel like we've got gifts up here somewhere. Gifts of the Spirit, so that counts. Disney. Music genres. Ooh, like what? Like what's okay for us to listen to? Yep, not country, I tell you that. Okay. Everything else is fine but country. Okay, now, give me some like top shelf beliefs. And I'm going to start with what Taylor said, that Jesus is the way. The only way. And these like give me the stuff like that you would die for. Like I'm talking like top shelf, like absolute, like Trinity, okay? There should be fewer of these than of the other categories. But let me know if there are any others. What are the most important beliefs that you hold on to? If there are any others. Say that again. Mode of baptism. I'm going to put baptism right here. Okay, good. You're just trying to get me to spell hard words in front of everybody, aren't you? I really have nice handwriting, but I scribble when I don't know how to spell a word. The Bible is the living word of God. Free will. Creation. What about creation? Okay. The loving nature of God. God is love. Maybe like one or two more. Sanctification. One more. Eternal security. Okay. So, I'm sure you noticed that I ordered them on the board, right? I kind of started in the bottom and I worked my way up. And so what we're getting into is what, I don't have a better term for this, if one is needed, but what we're getting into is what I call the three levels of commitment. Now, on the bottom we have preferences. Okay, and the preferences, that was length of worship. What do people wear? Are the chairs comfortable? Is there a good parking spot for me? In the middle, you had conviction. Things that, beliefs that we have that are formed theologically, things that we hold on to. Is it okay to watch Harry Potter? Are the gifts of the Spirit for today? Is it okay to drink alcohol? All of those types of things. And on the top shelf, we have absolute essential beliefs. the most important beliefs that we have. Now, here, there are a couple problems. One of the things that I think it's really easy to get wrong is knowing where to place certain ideas or beliefs. Question, when most church splits happen, at what level do they split over? Yeah, preferences. And again, I think that, and the reason I do this is because I want us to understand that, let me do this. So I mentioned in Ephesians 4 that Paul opens up by saying, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit, right? To maintain the unity of the Spirit. I think that unity happens up here, and I think conformity happens down here. When we don't understand where our beliefs and our convictions and our thoughts and our ideas, if we don't understand where they are meant to be ordered, what happens is you can create a lot of dysfunction really quickly. And again, like I asked the question and I heard several people say, on what level do most church splits happen? And they typically happen right here. Churches tend to split and division is created over some of the most trivial ideas and beliefs. I think the higher you move up on the board, the less likely those beliefs are to change, and I think the more tightly we hold on to those. I cannot even in my wildest imagination even think of what could possibly get me to think that God is not sovereign and good, that Jesus is not the way, the truth, and the life. I can't even in my imagination fathom what could possibly pull me out of that, right? But as we move a little bit further down, these change more frequently, right? Even just in disagreements, like I love that Noah and I, we disagree on a lot of things at this level, and the thing is, that's okay, right? He doesn't have to stop being my best friend because we disagree with things here, because these are not actually as important as these are, right? And so, and as you move further down, these should be way more likely to change, right? Our preferences. If I'm being honest, like, it's amazing that people put so much stock in these to the point that they're willing to cause division, especially when like these change all the time. What I prefer in terms of my experience in worship regarding the music, the style, the length, the volume, that is way different than it was for me 10 years ago. Right? Even, you know, the style of preaching I like, the type of building that we meet in, are the chairs comfortable enough? Is you know, you would be surprised how many people, and if you go on Barna, is it Barna Research? They conduct a lot of research, and they give a lot of statistics into, like, how people think about and experience church. And you would be shocked at how many people won't go to a church because they don't like the parking lot. And so what's happening is we're living in a time where there are a lot of people in the world who are not, I'll say even a lot of Christians, that they're not choosing the church they go to on the basis of do they hold the same essential beliefs and convictions that I do, the same essential beliefs that I do, right? And it's often not even being chosen by do we share similar convictions, right? Not that those have to be the same, because we have a lot of people even in this room who disagree theologically on things that fall into this category, and that is okay, right? But unfortunately, a lot of people are deciding what church they want to go to on the lowest level of of thought and belief and idea. Is this fully making sense to you guys? And so to tie this back even to what I've been talking about is that we all want to, I think to a degree we like to be right, if we're being honest. We like to be right, or maybe it's just that we don't like to be wrong. But if we don't, we need to understand where to order our thoughts and how to order our beliefs and how to order our convictions. Because, again, I don't know what in the world could possibly get me to change how I think about Jesus. I just don't think that exists. But the thing is, I want to be a person who pursues truth, because the reality is that my convictions and my preferences, those are not meant to be things that we hold on to so tightly. Right, our convictions change. How many of you would say, even in the past 2 or 3 years, that you've had convictions that you've changed your mind about? Maybe things that you thought like, oh, this isn't okay, and it's like, well, maybe it is. Or things that you're like, oh, this is okay, like Christians can do this, and you're like, actually, that's a no-go. Right, do you know what I'm talking about? Like those kinds of things change, especially as we mature. Right, as we mature and as we seek a greater understanding of who Jesus is and who he says we are, and we start to walk in alignment with that, you will find that I think you'll care a lot less about the preferences, your convictions will change, and you realize that the most important things in the world are your essential beliefs. And when you order it that way, the amazing thing is you would be surprised how many people you can be friends with even if you disagree with them. I just think there's far too much division in the church. I get, like, I'll be honest, if one day Noah came in and he was like, all right, guys, I've got some new ideas. I actually don't think Jesus is the only way. And I think, and you know, I don't believe in the Trinity. I don't believe in the sovereignty of God. I'd be like, you probably need to find another teacher because, like, this isn't for me anymore, right? Now, Noah comes in, and he's got different ideas, theologically and philosophically, than I do on a lot of topics that follow the conviction level. And I'm like, I love that. I love debating with people, and I love asking questions, and I love getting into people's minds and finding out, why do you think the way you think? What led you to this line of thought? Why do you believe that? And we all, I'm sure, have tons of different preferences. And preferences, because they are so vast and so changing, you'll never, ever in your life find a place that meets everything on the board, right? Like this church, honestly, it doesn't even meet all of my preferences, and I love it. I couldn't imagine being anywhere else, right? But it's just the reality that we need to be really proactive and intentional about keeping our focus on the things that are the most important and not allowing our preferences. Again, if you weren't here 2 weeks ago, Noah spoke on preferences, and 2 weeks ago he spoke, and if you haven't heard that message, go listen to it. Again, he said some really important things that I think needed to be heard. But I feel like that is about all I wanted to do or say. I've got 3 minutes. Does anybody have a thought? Does anybody have a thought? What are your thoughts? You have thoughts. What are they? I'll stand here for 3 minutes. I'll do it. Benjamin called. We'll see. Thank you. Well, if you guys are good, I'm good. Listen, we've got a prayer team, and so I know we opened this up earlier, but just in case you didn't have an opportunity to, or you are in need of prayer for something, please don't leave without having somebody pray with you. We believe very much in the power of prayer, and we like to stand in agreement with the Lord that he has good things for you. So if you're on the prayer team, come on up. If you need prayer, I invite you to come get prayer. Otherwise, you are dismissed.